It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. And some guests make us all giddy. And this, my friends, is one of them. We're talking to a legend today. Imagine that, man. This guy holds 11 patents, hundreds of copyrights, received so many industry, you know, just awards and accolades and all that stuff. He has changed the world of hot rodding, and he's on our podcast. And that, my friends, is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, this guy has like over 50 years of influence. He's moved mountains. And as Willie said, he's changed how we've like attacked performance, hot rodding, and everything else. He doesn't even need an introduction because everyone knows who this guy is. And this list is so incredibly long. I can't wait to dive in with him. And I've caught him, you know, face to face multiple times at SEMA and some other events. And it's always awesome and mind blowing because the guy is so incredibly smart and detailed and layered. And he's so full of data and information that you can't leave the conversation without like brain oozing out of your ears.
No.
You know, like, no. So plan on, you know, putting some tape on. I got tape on my ears to keep all the jelly inside.
Hey, take some notes, man. You're going to need it, man. It is one of those guys, you know, and we'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. It's Gale Banks.
Gale Banks.
Yeah, man. And when you think in and hear that name, you know, you got to appreciate what he's done to change the world of hot rodding. He literally has changed the world when you think about everything he's accomplished and just what he has brought to the racing industry, to the not just the diesel industry, which he's changed that by a paramount moves, but what he's done for hot rodding in general. It is amazing, man. He reminds me of my papa. See, I never saw him in person, but only standing in a crowd around him. I have seen a bunch of his videos. Like, if you don't follow this guy on some of the videos he makes on YouTube, my papa had no filter, and Gale's a little bit like that, man. It's awesome. He'll just tell you how it is. If you want a good crack up, watch the dino. Watch where he's watching the Hooligans Dino.
Yeah, run. Man, that's a just, great one.
He tears these guys apart, and they're his buddies, but he is just knocking them down, bro. It's like a bowler rolling strikes. It's just one right after another. So, yeah, man, he's got attitude. He is a force to be reckoned with, and we had him today on our podcast. Bird, what's the first thing you want to ask him about?
Oh, man. Well, there's so many diesel questions, but, you know, even talking to him a little bit before we're jumping on here, you know, Gale isn't a diesel guy. He is so huge, and he's influenced so much, and he's moved the needle more than probably anyone on the face of this earth. But he's just a guy who loves combustion engines, tons of boost, and turbos. And I love his comment that his axe is the turbo. He's ready to just go chop down anything and everything in his way with some big boost, whether it's gas, whether it's jet fuel, whether it's diesel fuel. So, man, I don't know, man. My mind is popping all over the place, but I do have a lot of diesel questions because I'm a little bit more familiar with the gas side. You know, having been on the designs, you know, at Ford with, you know, the 6.7 diesel that's out in the Super Duty, but all on the mechanical side and then kind of a step back from the combustion side. So, man, I'm ready to go on that line. How about you?
You've got specific questions, you know, about what his passion and where his passion lies. I've got questions about his era because he's seen it all.
Yeah.
Right? He sold his first engine in 1958 as a 16-year-old. He's seen the 50s, the 60s, which most people, you know, my age look at the 60s and go, that was the era of the greatest hot rods ever built. And here's a guy that lived it, built engines, figured out how to make them stronger. He lived through the 70s and all the missions, the 80s and all the garbage that people were putting out then. And the fact that he couldn't even sell a diesel, like a turbo for a diesel, he could not sell it, SEMA, in the 80s. And boom, look what he's done to the industry now. It's amazing. I can't wait. I just want to know what era he would like to live in forever. What, you know, what era he would like to go back if he had a time machine and take 10 years and relive, what era would that be? Because he's seen it all, and he's been there hands and elbows deep in it.
Well, from that perspective, then, right, where are we headed? Right, he's got enough tick points on the graph to go, well, guys, we're headed in this trajectory. You know, so here's where I think we're going to end up here in the next decade or two or three. So,
Right. Well, look, let's take a break, man. Enough with me and Bird. Let's get to the man, Gale Banks. Give us a couple minutes. We'll be right back on the Two Guys Garage Podcast with Kevin Bird and Willie B. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. And we have Gale Banks, the man, the myth, the legend. He is, I'm telling you, he is the guy that's had over half a century improving the internal combustion engine technology, everything applied to it, everything around it, how to get air through it, in it, on it, and out of it. This guy is done, man. It's amazing. So, Gale, welcome to the podcast, and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah, it is, man. And, hey, Kevin, so how did you guys first meet up, hook up, start talking? What was the connection there?
I want to think it was around the time that the 6.7 from Ford was coming out. So let's see. I think around 2010 or 11, might have started cranking away on that. No, when did that one come out? 11, right?
Yeah.
The 6.7?
Yeah.
So before that, maybe 2009, 10, we were cranking away in the background at Ford.
Patrick was running that program.
Yeah. Yep. So Pat was kind of running the bottom end. Drawing a blank on who was running the upper end at the time.
Dennis, Aussie. I think his name was Dennis.
Yeah, so we went through, you know, some phases, not to get too detailed on, you know, top secret stuff, but, you know, from our sort of advanced research team, we did the first sort of Skunkworks build, and then we started to do what looks like the final. So we probably nailed down 90% of all the architecture that you know today. And then kind of handed that off to our more production team to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, work out all the fine details and bugs. And I think those are a lot of the folks that you started to work with after I kind of stayed back in the R&D standpoint to, you know, pick up the next torch and light it up and get it rolling.
Yeah, Patrick had invited me by. He had a remote location where they were benchmarking the competition. And they had your 6.7s running, torn down for inspection, what have you. That was a huge compliment to me. He just wanted my 2 cents worth.
Well, hey, there's never been a Gale Banks 2 cents that wasn't worth 2,000. That's for damn sure. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say that right now.
that's right. You always throw a couple extra zeros on whatever.
Yeah, we're talking inside Ford right now. Maybe I'll back off here.
I got a question, Gale. As I read up on just all things that you've had your hands in, and you know, I see little excerpts and you know how you were engineering and building and supplying engines for you know defense contractors and directly to the military, and you did so for you know 35 plus years. And I hear you working with Ford and all these other. How many things have you had your hands in that you're not allowed to talk about, discuss, or reveal? Like there's so many that you can, but a lot you can't.
We started selling engines to the Navy in 1976. That was our first military involvement. And those weren't diesels, twin turbo, big block Chevys, intercooled with seawater. And we've done some diesel engine design. We got a military contract to do a Marine version of the Cummins inline six that we ran at Bonneville, get the world's fastest pickup truck, a record we held with GMC with a Cyclone program 10 years prior. I think our best one way was 210 with a little V6, not turbocharged, but I did intercool, so to speak. I charged air cooled the 110 degree air at Bonneville at that event, and we managed to run 210 with a 300 inch V6.
That's amazing. I love Bonneville, man. I've cut my teeth on the salt there several times, and I love it. It's one of the true hot rod places. If nobody's ever been, I bet Gale will tell you, at some point in your life, if you're a fan of hot rodding and all it brings to the table, you have to. It's a must. It's a bucket list to get to Bonneville.
We have, and I've been going since 1960. In fact, my partner's car, there's a Banks exhibit at the NHRA Museum, and my partner Studebaker is there. And we did a retro engine with a blower. It's got Eaton guts in it, but it looks like a 671. Yeah, 770 horse, 258 incher. Nice little setup. So that 53 Studebaker is there, and I ran, I had three of them, a street one and two race ones. That was the street car to run at Bonneville until they came out with the 82 Firebird. And then Bob Dorn, who was chief engineer, and John Chanella, who was chief stylist at Pontiac, approached me to run their new Firebird at Bonneville. And that replaced the Studebaker big time, because we ultimately went 277. Using boat technology that we ran in the 70s and circle boats, we ran big block twin turbo injected alcohol, 2,200 horsepower engines, and 18-foot circle boats.
what a ride.
Yeah, and that stuff... Yeah. That stuff found its way into, I used two turbos they were using on Offenhauser engines at Indy at the time. They were good for 1,100 horsepower each on alcohol. So I had 2,200 horsepower, 430-inch big blocks. I ran the shorter stroke. I didn't run the longer stroke, 454 thing. And we progressed it back into automobiles. I did a lot of boat motors, probably 30 years, 35 years of it. Even sold five different makes of boats, rigged boats, all in my engine shop, speed shop in San Gabriel. So we took that marine technology and we put it in the Sundowner Corvette around 1979, 80. And on a 201 record with a supercharger, we ran 240. So that we upped that record 39 miles an hour with a marine turbo setup, liquid intercooler, running ice water through it.
Wow. Imagine all those guys out of Bonneville, because I know the attitude they have. Some guy shows up, puts 39 miles per hour on your record, and does so. I had some spare boat parts in the shop, man. I just threw it together, nothing big, and drops 39 on your record.
This guy knows no boundaries.
What I did was I took that alcohol circle boat setup, ran it on gasoline, put hot headers on it, instead of the marine setup. The underlying theme for my whole career is the turbocharger. Yeah. I saw the first one in 1957 at Blackie's Surplus over on Alameda. They had some P38 engines and there were turbos with them. And I just looked at that thing. It was General Electric, as I recall, made the turbocharger. And I went, whoa, what the hell have we got here? I've always been interested in Pike's Peak, and I started studying on the turbocharger. General Electric proved that turbo, dynoed it at 14,110 feet of altitude.
We're still doing that today,
The whole thing with Pike's Peak, and we've run a couple efforts there. I ran 2 years with Dahlenbach in a unlimited open wheel car. Had the fastest car there in qualifying 2 years in a row. First year on the launch, he went to 10 tenths and twisted off a half shaft right off the starting line. Yeah. Second year, we qualified quickest. And the first straightaway, he went off into the trees. So didn't work out very well. Then we did the Size Matters diesel semi with a super huge ass Whipple supercharger on it. This was a Detroit 60 series. Huge ass Whipple blowing a monstrous Kong, we called the turbocharger. And lots of intercooling, a lot of water meth. We even used a water meth system with just water to cool the brakes. You wouldn't think you'd need to cool the brakes going uphill. But at Pike's Peak, you come hot into the turns if you got any power at all. We turbocharged Dahlenbach's car. Prior, it was naturally aspirated, injected. We didn't run out of Paul Dahlenbach, but we kind of ran out of car. That happens when you turbo even a road race car, anything. An old guy one day K.S. Pittman. He was screwing around with turbos and gassers, you know, drag racing. He says, Gale, do you realize you can't go to, and he looked from side to side like it was a secret. You can't go to sleep at night and dream the power you can make with turbocharging. And I told him, yes, I can. Son, you back talking me?
Well, this guy figured this out 50 plus years ago. And, you know, we're still kind of in this last just decade of where everybody's waking up. You know, Gale saw the future with turbos so long ago. And it wasn't until all these, you know, EcoBoost and the OEs coming out. And yeah, we've known about turbos, but, you know, the aftermarket's coming around, the OEs coming around, the whole world is giving the turbo a big hug. And Gale's just kind of sitting back there going, it's about damn time.
You know? Yeah, it is. What's next? You know.
Well, speaking of boost, I was catching one of your videos recently, and you had a 7-liter Duramax, I think it was, with a twin turbo and a supercharger.
Yeah.
The last I saw, I think you guys had just fired it up, and I forget how much power it made, but clearly the thing was just warming up. So have you gotten farther with that one? You know, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Or is there a bigger, badder version somewhere that we don't know about yet? Like, what is the most nasty project you've done?
The blower we ran on the Detroit, Size Matters was the name of that truck. And there's a Size Matters 2 video that we shot. It's on YouTube, that we shot down at the Matson docks down in San Pedro. You guys got to see that video. It's a drift car against a drift semi. It is something to see. The car is like a Datsun 240 with a LS in it, you know, and the truck gives them hell. Basically, it's a 5-liter Whipple, a big mother, and then the father of all intercoolers. It's a 5-inch thick core. I mean, the thing allows me to build air density like nothing you can believe. The first hit we get at the air is two precision turbos.
Yeah, so you're two staging. Yeah, you're staging, and then yeah. You're intercooling between the stages, right?
Most guys don't, but we are. You know, I don't want to kill the Whipple with heat. In both cases, I have a limit, temp limit, at the discharge of the turbos of 410, and the same temp limit at the discharge of the blower. The trick is to maximize the air density through the turbos by matching them properly through the intercooler into the blower. So we've got virtually ambient air temperature entering the blower, and ambient air temperature in the intake manifold after the final intercooler. So the density ratio across that forced air system is equal to the pressure ratio. So pressure ratio doesn't mean what means something is air density. How many pounds per 1,000 cubic feet? Because you're processing cubic feet with the engine. So how much air mass can I put into each cubic foot, and then how much fuel mass can I mix with that? That's the secret here.
Yeah, so for most people that know a little bit about boosting, right, you put on a big blower, you put on a big set of turbos or whatever, and you wick it up as much as it can go. And then you think, well, I'm going to add a bigger turbo, I'm going to add a bigger blower.
Or more pulley. The most common thing is speed it up.
Right, but at some point you want more. Right. And so then you got to ask yourself, do I want to keep speeding the thing up, or I'm out of speed? Do I want to keep putting on a bigger turbo? Now I've got more lag or whatever else comes negative with it. And then you start thinking about, now I'm going to stage it. So I'm going to get a pressure rise out of the first stage, but now I've got heat. And like you said, you cool that. So you cool it off a little bit. Then you put it through the next stage and you pressurize that again. So now you're getting some double action, and ideally you're cooling that one more time before it gets shoved into that motor. So you're talking about some big boost.
Yeah, and it's a 7-liter. So it's stock displacement is 4, 6.6, 403 inches. I'm an old guy. The magic number back in the 60s was 427. And that's still my magic number. So I built a 427 Duramax for this project. On the first fire, we took it up to about 3,800 RPM, had a look, and backed out of it. It made 740 horsepower and about 1,020 some pound feet of torque at 3,800. That's just coming off idle, so to speak. There's a world. I mean, that the air fuel ratio on that run was like 28-1. We usually have a threshold, a smoke threshold or a smoke limit at about 18-1. Your injectors are really working righteously. I like to run smoke limited. I don't like to blow smoke. That's fuel that I injected and didn't use. So why inject it if you're not going to use it?
All right, I got a couple of questions. We're gonna take a break real quick. Can you, on the other side of this break, can you tell us what you think this thing is going to make? And then we got everybody thinking about this in the commercial here.
Yeah.
What twin turbo 5-liter super setup with plenty of intercooling on a warm up run made 770 horsepower on a diesel. That's pretty strong, but that's nothing in Gale's world. So maybe on the flip side, you give us some predictions on that. And then the other one, I want you to kind of explain, because people know what rolling coal is. That's when a lot of diesel guys start blowing black smoke out the back. And I love your comment about, you know, wasted fuel. So hang on to that. Explain a little bit more about what your thoughts are on air fuel ratio and rolling coal when we come back from the break. How's that?
All right.
I'm all about that as well, man. I'm from Eastern Kentucky. We dug coal. We didn't roll it. all right. And I got to ask you about his era. We could talk for days about the history behind this man. But coming up after the break, we're talking what Banks is doing moving forward. They have some really incredible devices. If you're not aware of what the pedal monster is, it's lurking. It's behind, I don't know, your brake pedal somewhere. It's just in the corner waiting for you to put it on. And wow, does it make an impact into your ride. A few other things they're doing at Banks that really is just unbelievable. So back after the break on the Two Guys Garage Podcast with Kevin Bird and Willie B. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. Appreciate your time. We have Gale Banks on our podcast today. The man behind so much in the world of hot rodding. Like, he's got tons of accolades. He's probably got more trophies than everybody listening has got hair on their head. And that's a lot. Let me tell you. He's just one of those guys that have had his hands and immersed in the world of hot rodding. And wow, have you changed the game, man. So thanks for the time. And let's get back. So, Kevin, you were talking about a 427 cubic inch, basically. What is it, 500 cubic inch you like working with, Gale? What's your poison there?
We were talking about our 427 monster truck build. Our original goal was 1,350 horsepower and really, really crisp throttle response. We already exercised this engine with a blower only. And we were knocking at the door of 700 horsepower just with the blower. Whipple has new technology, what they call Gen 5. The 5-liter Whipple we're running right now is going to be replaced. So I will be doing I do a series called Engineering Unboxed on YouTube and Facebook.
Oh, see it. And I like your graphics, man. You got good graphics for a little homemade video. Pretty impressive.
Well, I'm redecorating the graphics office. Let me tell you, I'm taking care of those cats. So, anyhow, 1350 somewhere in there. Where do I think it goes? Bang, north of 2,000 horsepower. I think the issue here is engine speed. It's cylinder firings per unit time.
That's the trouble on a diesel, right? You can make so much cylinder pressure.
That and peak cylinder pressure.
Yep, you can make a ton of it, but you can't spin it fast enough.
The original design of the engine this is based on, which is an LMM, is about 150 bar peak cylinder pressure. That's barometers. So 150 times nominally 15, gives you the pressure in PSI. The L5P in dyno 2 that I'm running just did 1,004 horsepower at 3,800. That one is 183 bar design. The L5P, if you're building Duramaxes, fooling with the older stuff, show you how robust this thing is. No studs, no head gaskets, no pistons, none of that jive. This is a stock engine. I did a cam, worked with Billy Godbold at Comp, went through three iterations. It's a cam to stuff into a stock L5P with stock pistons and no valve reliefs. But we're 1,004 horsepower. I did improve the turbocharger. You know, I have improved the cooling. I am going to go to bigger piston cooling nozzles. But the thing has stock pistons in it, stock rods, everything. Am I getting excited? Yeah. Did my voice just kind of go up? And
so these stock diesels, right? You know, we think of the Cummins, the Duramax, the Ford. You know, from my experience, I think stock, they're kind of in the 160 to maybe 190 bar
sure.
design range, you know, from the
today.
Factory.
Yes.
Yeah,
today.
Maybe pushing upwards to 200 plus. Where are you taking them? Like, how far are you pushing, do you think?
260 right now.
Okay.
On the stock engine.
And then RPM-wise, yeah. How far past the OE red line are you eking these things?
Yeah, the OE red line under power is nominally 3,100. We're at 3,800. The cam we did uses stock valve spring. All the valve gear stock. I want to build a production engine for hot rodding. In other words, a crate motor, a diesel crate motor, which I want to put the cam in at Duramax. So it has to meet all the assembly criteria. We do a lot of that with our military engines. There's a whole bunch of bank stuff, lower crankcase, oil sump, flywheel housing, on and on and on, that I feed into Duramax, and they assemble the bank's engines. And then they come out here to the coast, and I put about, well, the wire looms, the intelligence, all the turbocharging, a bunch of stuff. 300 and some parts go on out here at our factory. And we 22-minute dyno test, and they ship to Oshkosh, Wisconsin for the JLTVs. Joint Light Tactical Vehicle replaces the Humvee. But I'm getting off.
Well, you have so many tracks, though. That's what's amazing. You just listen to some of these stories.
We need like six more hours.
No. It's six more days. So yeah. Six more weeks. More than half the engineering staff here at Banks is EE, electrical engineers, computer science guys. And truth be known, my first automotive venture was a three-wheeled electrically propelled tractor that was pulse code radio controlled. I did that in 1958 as well.
Wait, you did a RC car for a tractor? You made a tractor an RC car?
A pulse code. It controlled the steering. It controlled forward and reverse. It was powered by a World War II landing gear retracting motor, which is reversible and has an electric clutch. And then I steered it with aileron trim motors. So
I love you, man.
So the answer is yes. Gail Banks has done everything.
He built the remote control track.
This is great.
I freely admit to anyone that I'm a freaking nerd, and you can be a mechanical, but I'm a full-blooded nerd because it's not only mechanical, it's electrical. So I'm a goner, man. I'm just,
yeah, man.
It's serious.
I thought I was bad. This guy is out. Wow.
We've done a thing we call a pedal monster. It goes between the pedal and the ECU.
This thing is so tricky, guys. So tricky.
The foot feed. I mean the go pedal, the loud pedal. And I for a year, I kept telling the guys, I don't want to screw with that. You just push the pedal down further and you get more. Until I got one of those Blackwing Cadillacs, which is the all-wheel drive, twin turbo, 4.2.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out of the box. It's a CT6V, it's called. And it's quick. It's a mother. Out of the box, it's 550 horsepower, 10-speed automatic, all-wheel drive. It grips like a mother. Anyhow, I put a prototype of Pedal Monster in that thing, and it bumped my head against the headrest, and I went, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
This borders on sex. You know, I mean, this right? is, in a way, it's safer than sex, though.
Yes.
And you can do it constantly.
Well, that's if you're a good driver. Now, for everybody out there, you know, when you've got an electronic throttle, you need, you know, a pedal and some kind of controls to then, you know, whatever your motion of your pedal is, whatever you push your foot down, it's going to open the throttle in some ratio. So a lot of times the OEs put a really slow ratio.
And that's a calibration.
Yeah. So they put a slow ratio in there for the average person who doesn't want their car to get out from under them or whatever else. But for us performance guys, it leaves you a lot to yearn for, right? And so
yes.
Oh, yeah.
With these
yeah.
little interfaces, right now you can program your pedal and your throttle to act in any kind of relationship that you want. So all of a sudden you can get that instant bite, that instant sort of power and torque to the wheels. And man, does it make a difference, as you're talking about, in driving your vehicle.
The thing that troubled me, we run what's on all our electronics, in fact, all our products, FMEA, failure mode effects analysis.
Yep.
It's a engineering term.
Nerd speak. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since I'm the last guy on the market with what we call the Pedal Monster, I decided to fingerprint everybody else. And I found that if they fail or lose voltage, you got no pedal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not limp home. The pedal does nothing.
I saw that in your video. And it, like I said, you guys have to watch and engage in his videos. He explains all of this where everybody else, and this is what's great, everybody else fails in all the points they fell at. He put all these safety features, all these, you know, real robust. If there is a problem, it goes back to factory to stock settings and all these safety components that are always talking to one another. And man, his Pedal Monster, for anybody looking for a throttle booster, is above and beyond anything out there on the market. And you could use it for so many applications. Sorry to interrupt, but I watched that video in amazement. I'm like, wow.
Well, that's cool. To your point, Willie, it's a universal automotive product. It's not a diesel product. I got guys now running them in Corvettes, running them in BMWs. I mean, all over the map.
I have a CTS-V right behind me, just like you were talking, a Cadillac. It's super
cheap. Oh, you've seen one of them.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to put one on my car right behind me.
This is a CT6-V. They only made 275 of the damn things, and then they shut down the plant.
Whew.
So I'm lucky to have one. And my daughter, who runs this place from a business standpoint, she runs both companies. Banks Tech is our military engine company. I'm just the engineering guy. And she got one too.
You guys have market share on those things, man.
Well.
All right. Well, before we get too far, we got to nail down two things real quick. So on that 7 liter, that 427 yes. diesel, it's got the yes. super, it's got the twin turbos, it's got massive intercooling, it's got a lot of other Gale Banks magic on it. Where do you think that one's going to end up for power?
Well, my goal is 1350. We're spinning at 6,000 RPM, but I can, the speed limit is piston mass is the first thing. You know, you're trying to pull the pin eye out of the piston at top dead center, you know,
mm-hmm.
Reverse the direction there. So there's quite a bit of jerk that happens as you get the RPM up. Limiting speed on the valve gear will let me go to 6,500. But what I call the cylinder fill percentage, what's the density in the intake manifold compared to the density in the cylinder? Cylinder fill is a percentage. You never get 100%. Well, you could have 100% cylinder fill. It's possible. I haven't seen it, especially with the back pressure of a couple of turbines out back, you know, the blowdown, getting the exhaust out of the cylinder. But with a super turbo, right now on that pole where we were real lean, We had 60, I think it was 66, 67 pounds of manifold pressure and 42 pounds of turbine inlet pressure. So the Delta P engine, what I call the engine scavenge ratio, was way favorable. I was sweeping everything, all the exhaust residuals, 100%. I was actually supercharging the exhaust manifold at that point. We have a new Gen 5 blower that I'm going to unbox tomorrow or maybe this afternoon from Whipple. It's a 3.8 liter, but they have changed the, man, that thing is so much more efficient. And I can make more boost with it. In other words, pressure ratio with it, and keep the density up.
Right, right.
So I think my goal might be 2,000 horsepower.
Woo, man, out of a diesel.
Now, there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys that will tell you, "Hey, I'm making more than that in my pickup truck." You know, there's a lot of that opinion out there. And the measure of success is, I can blot out the sun with my exhaust. You can't, you know, I turn day into night with my diesel truck. And all I got to say to those guys is there's a point of diminishing returns. If you have minute amounts of smoke, you're borderline rich. You're probably gaining a little power, but you're making exhaust gas temperature that's going to kill the turbocharger engine and turbo if you sustain it.
Right, right, right.
So there's what I call temporary horsepower and permanent horsepower. The aftermarket lives in a world of temporary horsepower. I can do this for 3 to 5 seconds. You look at these dyno poles and it's kiddie land, it's toy land. It's like, please children, stop showing me that.
Well, this is a guy who's delivering to the military, and the military's a little bit engaged farther than 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, right?
So our test is NATO, 400 hours, 85% of which is at wide open throttle, full load. And for the Navy, a double NATO, 800 hours of that.
800 hours.
10-hour cycles, so you go through 80 cold starts, 80 hot soaks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an endurance engine guy. I mean, Bonneville is the lowest level of endurance that you find. I've run boat races and we've won them in New Zealand, 11 days long. Every river in New Zealand was covered in that event. So we did world-class marine endurance racing, river racing, starting back in the 70s. We got, I think, 16 world championships out of 12 world championships out of 16 years.
Wow.
I mean, our gasoline twin turbo marine engines just lived and made big numbers.
So tell me real quick the difference. Like, so when you're running a big, you know, gas engine boosted, right, you start to build up a lot of heat, you throw a lot of fuel at it for cooling and for knock relief, right? When you do that with the diesel, right, everything's happening a little bit different because you're just, you're shoving in a lot of air and then you're kind of putting in as much fuel as you want to essentially, you know, make the power.
But there, when you add fuel, it adds heat. It doesn't subtract heat. You don't enrich. With a diesel, the leaner it is, the cooler it is. With gasoline, lean is hot. So it's completely turned around. Spark versus compression ignition.
So most of the guys that are blowing big black smoke essentially are real hot EGTs?
They're making really small briquettes. Every particle of smoke is a fuel particle that you cooked in the absence of oxygen, which is how you make a briquette. All of that is fuel energy that only added to the heat problem. You know, you've gone so rich and it's so hot and you just keep adding fuel. Those guys smoke those engines commonly in a short tractor pull or a truck pull. So when I talk about horsepower, you got to talk about horsepower that'll live 400 or 800 hours of wide open throttle.
I love that.
Now you're talking.
That's living.
Most production engines will not do that.
Oh no.
Pickup truck, I don't care what you're doing. They won't do a NATO.
No, and I love the fact that you call it NATO. Hey, question, since you have so many, you know, passes and seasons and knowledge as to, you know, just eras in hot rodding and times when, you know, you've seen huge evolutions in power making and what we're able to harness from, you know, with turbos and superchargers and the likes. What era for you, if you could live in one decade, what era for you would you love to relive? And, you know, if you could live over and over, would you stick yourself in?
Okay. We're talking about nostalgia versus now. A friend of mine, now deceased, Sid Mead, a futurist, a visual futurist, former designer for Ford Motor Company back in the 50s. I'm a futurist as well. So we became very good friends. And one day he told me, the future doesn't just occur one day. The future is comprised of everything that happened up to the word now. Because in its visual futures, you might see a 64 Lincoln suicide door, you know, president's death car or something like that. And it finally hit me. The good old days are right now. A lot of guys stopped at some point and they love that era. There's a lot of guys that I know with gray ponytails that, you know, they fit a certain era. There's a lot of younger guys who want to co-opt an era, a lot of hipsters. I've got dear friends who are hipster hot rodders, and I love their stuff. But I love, and they're at Bonneville, babe. They have discovered Bonneville about 8 or 10 years ago. So, and I love seeing that stuff. But been there, done that? It's tomorrow. That's what I'm interested in. Where will we be tomorrow? What will we be hot rodding tomorrow? And how will we do it? But what's the future going to be? That's the age-old question. And is the IC engine dead? No, it's not. How do we, and what is the future fuel is the other question.
And all of those things we're going to answer on the next Two Guys Garage podcast with Gail Banks. Guaranteed to happen. So I'll tell you, man, don't forget about our show that airs weekends on the Motor Network. Check your local listings. Thanks to our guest, Gail Banks. What a wealth of knowledge. What a great resource that is, and what an honor it is to have him on the podcast. For my man, Kevin Bird, I am Willie B., our producer, Scooper, and our executive producer, Bob Ecker.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out our website, twoguysgarage.com. Share your thoughts with us on social. We're everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at Two Guys Garage. Two Guys Garage Podcast is a copyright 2020 Britain Productions Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Man, I feel like man. I need to be that guy's avatar. Like, just download your brain, man. Let me have some of that knowledge, because that is, it's unreal. Unreal.
Oh, I'm not done with it.
I don't think we even scratched the surface with him, man. We have definitely got to bring him back, because it's too much fun. We could go, I was going to say hours. He said days. I think it's more like weeks. Yes. To extract out all the amazing stuff and the history. Oh, man, what he's got going on.
A lot of knobs have been turned in 62 years of doing this. So.
Yeah, man.
And I haven't forgotten any of it. I have not forgotten. Not yet. I have. So as long as it's interesting, let's do it again.
All right, guys, we will see you on the next Two Guys Garage podcast.
And I bet it's going to be with Gail. Can't wait. Two Guys Garage Podcast is a production of Britain Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.